your journalist word for end, and that is 30. I bet you didn't know that. That almost all journalists, when they finish their columns, they write the word 30 down at the bottom, and that means the end.
I knew that.
You didn't know that?
I knew that.
You knew that, Corley?
I used to be a typesetter.
How do you like that?
The press releases would always be dash 30.
Dash 30. Yeah. Well, that was...
What the hell does that mean, anyway?
I don't know. 30 is 30. And today is September 30th, the last day of the month. And every one of the works I had some played today had some relation to the word 30, to the number 30. There's the Geistliches Lied of Brahms, Opus 30. The Cantata number 30 of Bach, the Symphony number 30 of Haydn, the Concerto number 3, Opus 30 of Rachmaninoff, the Symphony number 30 by Mozart, and the String Quartet number 3, Opus 30 by Tchaikovsky. Well, just something else to try to keep you a little bit on your toes when you listen to David Brown here at WUSB in Stony Brook, 90.1 on your FM stereo dial. If you can't find it, play around till you get that 90.1. Stay tuned for Stardate and that brain-damaged fellow, Eric Corley. Thank you for listening.
Stardate September 30th. Of Jupiter's four largest moons, the second going outward from the planet is Europa. It's nearly as large as Earth's own moon, but unlike our moon, many scientists believe Europa may have oceans of liquid water hidden beneath its icy surface. If these oceans do exist, Europa's environment may be able to sustain primitive organisms. That's because the temperature and pressure necessary for water to exist is within the survival range for primitive life. Interest in the possibility of water on Europa heightened about a decade ago when Voyager 1 and 2 swept past the planet. Pictures hinted at what theorists had predicted, namely that tidal forces from Jupiter warmed Europa, possibly enough to melt water ice. Unfortunately, the pictures weren't decisive on the question of water on Europa, and scientists have anxiously been waiting for a chance to return. They'll get that chance beginning in mid-October, when the Galileo spacecraft is launched toward Jupiter, with plans to make several very close swings past this Jovian moon, and hopefully provide better pictures and other information. Like the other large moons of Jupiter, the four Galilean satellites, Europa was named for a romantic conquest of the mythological god. According to mythology, Jupiter truly did love Princess Europa. He carried her off to an island where he protected and provided for her the rest of her days. She in turn brought him life in the form of three sons. Wouldn't it be ironic if our modern-day planet and moon paralleled this tale, if primitive life exists in Europa's underground oceans? For the University of Texas McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
Return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in
number is 2. Please make a note of it. Please repeat.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Ring damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Bush,
what did you say?
Can you say David?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say David?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say David?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
If you do not push a key in 3 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
Stubborn things. Facts are stubborn things. Now I
Well, here we are. We all made it safely. A Saturday night. Saturday, the last Saturday of September. Oh, yes. September, what, 30th this is? September 30th, 1989, the last day of September. Tomorrow is October. Got to get used to it. 13 minutes after 10 o'clock. Good evening. How are you? I'm fine. Thanks very much. Eric Corley with you for brain damage until midnight. And we have all kinds of things. That, by the way, is probably the last time you will ever hear that introduction because we have many, many people that we have hired that are working on nothing else but composing a new intro for this radio program. So,
this transmission is coming to you approximately halfway between the moon and the earth.
They're hard at work in there, doing God knows what. We have all kinds of things planned tonight. We're not going to do any of them, but we did plan them. It's just our way of feeling futile. And we are taking your phone call, 632-6901. First, though, the return of an old favorite. Lots of people have been sending in threats and all kinds of blackmail, intimidation-type tactics, which have worked. They don't usually work, but this time they did because of the nature of what they were saying. And we are going to return... Whoops, no, I'm not going to return to that. Sorry. No more Reagan. That's over. We're going to return to quite a different thing, Radio Moscow and Moscow Mailbag, and then we'll be back with all kinds of other things. 632-6901 is our telephone number if you want to call up and be on the radio and affect all kinds of people that you'll never know. 632-6901, here's Radio Moscow.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Tonight, coming to you from the studios of the North American service of Radio Moscow. In this edition, you'll be able to hear the following. Our regular features, top priority and sidelights on Soviet life, Soviet people about President Gorbachev's address to the nation, a report about space films for children, and more. So stay tuned.
This is your program, Moscow Mailbag. We are resuming this program after a month-long pause caused by summer vacations. First, let's take a look at some of the questions we've lined up in today's mailbag. Is the Soviet Union changing from Marxism-Leninism and turning capitalist? What's your opinion about the Pamyat movement in your country? What is being planned in Soviet space research and technology? And whatever happened to the Soviet supersonic passenger plane? These questions and more are coming up in today's mailbag. Here's a question from Bill Copeland of Paris, California. Do you have any solutions to the problem of smoking? I've been smoking for over 15 years and would like to stop smoking for my health.
Unfortunately, our doctors tell us there are no solutions that are 100% effective. Smoking is an addiction, which proves to be rather hard to get rid of. There are prescription drugs on sale to help you kick the habit, but many people complain they don't provide complete relief from a cigarette craving. Anti-smoking chewing gum is said to be of help, but again, it's only partially effective. The best results I've seen achieved so far is through psychological counseling and anti-smoking groups. But you'd better be prepared to accept the fact that no one will be able to help you unless you want to help yourself. You have to be determined to kick the habit and be motivated to do so. Ironically enough, some people finally stop smoking due to health reasons. I've known some people who quit smoking after suffering a stroke or a heart attack. So why wait until something like that happens to you, God forbid? My personal advice is to find a healthy replacement for smoking. In my own case, it's been swimming and general exercise, and smoking and physical exercise just don't seem to go hand in hand. If you're determined to try, avoid drinking parties and much revelry, too, for starters. That shall help you get on the right track smoothly. The best time to try and succeed is at New Year's, while making your resolutions. Try maybe find yourself an equally determined person to share the burden and quit once and for all. There's no way to ease it out gradually. Personally, I've been off for almost a year now and feel I can carry on, so... why don't you try it that way? And good luck to you, Bill.
Next, a letter from Mark Grabowski of Baltimore, Maryland. Why don't we have a free press in the USSR?
Well, it's a strange thing to say in this time of glasnost or openness about public affairs in this country. Perhaps for the first time since the 20s, the Soviet news media have acquired the kind of openness that would have been unthinkable, say, 5 years ago even. Actually, much of the stuff you hear about the Soviet Union these days comes from the Soviet news media. American newsmen, by their own admission, are having a field day in the Soviet Union these days. All they have to do is look through the Soviet news media and file their stories back home. The Soviet media is full of stories about official corruption, economic mismanagement, Joe Stalin's reign of terror, you name it, they have it. Soviet news organizations are vying for readership, and many publications have been so successful that they sell like hotcakes. In fact, a recent surge in readership interest has caused another shortage in this country, and that's a shortage of paper. Actually, after many years of sterile news reporting, some Soviets are flabbergasted at the deluge of sensational stuff they now find in their news media, and many people find it hard to adjust to the newly found freedom in the media. So, I would say our media has gone a long way from the time when much of the reporting was taken up by glowing accounts of our readers' travels and speech-making, and alleged economic successes, the results of which we have yet to see.
And one more question from Mr. Grabowski. What is the current thinking in your country about the greenhouse effect?
We accept that the primary cause of the greenhouse effect is the burning of fossil fuels, such as coal, oil, and natural gas. That accounts for about 50% of the greenhouse effect. While a more extensive use of nuclear power plants appears to be a logical way out, we know that nuclear power production has its drawbacks and limitations. Certainly, after the Chernobyl nuclear disaster, Soviet public opinion runs heavily against increasing the use of nuclear power plants. However, Soviet experts believe that nuclear power, for the present, provides the only realistic alternative to the continuing use of fossil fuels and the resulting greenhouse effect, provided, of course, that nuclear power engineering is safe and foolproof.
And here's a question from Bruce Hightower of Greenville, South Carolina. He wonders, whatever happened to the Soviet supersonic plane? Was it faster than the Anglo-French Concorde?
Its top speed was over twice the speed of sound, 2,500 kilometers per hour. That's about the same as the Concorde's speed. But unlike the British-French SST, the Soviet jet was plagued by design drawbacks right from the start. It guzzled a lot more fuel and produced too much noise and air pollution. In 1973, its reputation was marred by a crash at the Paris Air Show. Although it did start weekly passenger flights in 1977 between Moscow and Almaty, the Kazakh capital, the flights were terminated within a year as not being cost-effective. Eventually, the Soviet SSTs, actually a dozen of them, found their way to aircraft museums as something like white elephants. They look like huge white birds with their beaks drooping toward the ground, but perhaps Soviet aircraft designers will one day reconsider their attitude to the whole concept. Who knows? After all, the Concorde is still flying high.
Next, a letter from Frederick Conrad Jr. of Bel Air, Ohio. I'm a space research enthusiast. If possible, could I have some information on both the present state of Soviet research and technology and what is being planned in both the near future and long-range plans? I realize these are big areas, so whatever information you can give me will be greatly appreciated.
Those are big areas indeed. Let me say what is worth saying essentially on the subject. The Soviet Union currently launches a new rocket into space every 4 days, averaging almost 100 such vehicles a year. It's true they're the same old rockets that were used 20 years ago, but they've proved to be reliable and cost-effective. The Soviet space program accounts for 4/5 of all space launches in the world. Such consistency and frequency of space launches, including manned flights, have allowed this country to amass a wealth of information and experience. Some of the notable achievements lately have included launches to study Halley's Comet, the development of a super booster Energia rocket, and the Soviet Union's own space shuttle. In other areas, our space program has continued to develop orbital flights, particularly permanent space labs with crew rotation, and a variety of experiments carried out on board. In recent years, the Soviet Union has begun to seek foreign participation in its own space program. A number of foreigners, specially trained for the purpose, flew on board our space vehicles, among them a French pilot. More flights are open to foreign participants, and joining Soviet spacemen shortly will be British, Austrian, French, West German, and Spanish nationals. Way ahead, perhaps, in the not-too-distant future, the Soviet Union hopes to send a crew to Mars. Our scientists tell us that won't happen before the end of this century, probably sometime in the next century, but such a mission is perfectly feasible, provided, of course, that our money-conscious legislators and the nation as a whole are willing to foot the bill.
Next, a letter from Ernst Zundel, who makes his home in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I've heard about what you call the Pamet movement. What is your opinion about this movement and its leaders?
Pamet is the Russian word for memory. Officially, the movement is called the Russian National Patriotic Front. It's one of many unofficial groups that have sprung up across the country under the policy of glasnost and perestroika. But Pamet stands apart from most other groups for its openly chauvinistic and anti-Semitic views and practices. Recently, they staged a noisy protest demonstration in front of the Moscow Television Center against what they claimed was undue Zionist influence in the Soviet mass media. And last April, they held a rally commemorating the anniversary of Joseph Stalin's birth. Those demonstrations alone tell you a lot about the nature of the Pamet movement. Pamet justifiably deplores the sorry state of Russian historical monuments, dilapidated churches, the Russian countryside, which is dying out, rampant drunkenness, in short, all those problems that are in evidence and which humiliate the dignity of the Russian people. They deplore the fact that the Russian people eke out a meager existence in a huge and richly endowed country. And what is the Pamet leader's conclusion? They claim that behind all those troubles and tribulations of the Russian people is a Zionist cabal, which supposedly pulls the strings manipulating Soviet leaders and charting the country's policies. Well, that must be some kind of an obsession that has gotten into those guys. That is putting it mildly.
A question from Joseph McBride of Bridgeport, Connecticut. Is the Soviet Union changing from Marxism-Leninism and turning capitalist?
Well, we are yet to hear our leaders tell us that this country is abandoning Marxism-Leninism and turning capitalist. It's true there's a lot of talk of overhauling the Soviet economy to make it more market-oriented and efficient. But then there's nothing in Marxism-Leninism that does not allow its followers to streamline the economy and make it more market-oriented and efficient. I don't see why this should make it capitalist and contrary to our basic principles. Marxism-Leninism is basically against the exploitation of man by man. In other words, you can't live off work done by other people. Some private businesses have lately been allowed in the Soviet Union, but they're basically small-scale and do not permit exploitation. They're known here as cooperative businesses. Shortly after the revolution, its leader, Lenin, himself promoted the idea of cooperative movement, and for some time such businesses were allowed and prospered. Subsequently, though, particularly under Stalin's autocratic rule, such business activity was banned, and what we call command and administrative methods, coercive methods, took hold in running the economy. That proved to be devastating to the nation's economy, and we're currently trying to sort things out and make the economy work on a healthy basis of cost accounting and market forces.
Now, here's another question from Bruce Hightower of Greenville, South Carolina. Recently, I saw Soviet warships making a friendly port of call visit to the U.S. Navy's Norfolk, Virginia base. Have any U.S. warships made similar visits at the Soviet ports?
Yes, two U.S. naval vessels did pay a return visit to a Soviet naval installation. Actually, they dropped anchor at Sevastopol, a large port and naval base on the Black Sea. They came last month and stayed for 5 days in the Sevastopol harbor. The vessels were the USS Thomas C. Gates, a 9,500-ton missile cruiser, and the USS Kaufman, a missile frigate, both part of the 6th Fleet stationed in the Mediterranean. This is only the second American naval visit to the Soviet Union in post-war years. 14 years ago, two U.S. naval vessels called at the port of Leningrad on the Gulf of Finland. And let me tell you that the latest U.S. naval visit caused nothing short of a sensation in Sevastopol, with lots of gawkers on hand to greet the American visitors and take a closer look at the vessels. The American seamen, for their part, must have been impressed by the showy turnout of Soviet girls vacationing at the time on the Black Sea coast, which is a popular health and recreational area.
And that's it for today's edition of Moscow Mailbag. The author of today's program was Yuri Reshetnikov.
You know, I never heard that song in before. Well, there's more. There's more. Had a little bit of trouble there at the end, but that's that was an additional little bit there on the tape from Radio Moscow this week. It's interesting because they sent us one of these little feedback forms not too long ago, and we sent it back based on the feedback that we've gotten on the program. And one of the things people seem to want to hear is a little bit more music, so that's exactly what they put on. They put on a little bit more music. I don't quite know why that particular piece was there, but that was Radio Moscow, Moscow Mailbag, a weekly part of this weekly series, and hopefully we'll bring you more such interesting things in the future. Well, folks, I have been, while that was on, I was paying attention, but I was also doing something else. I was looking at newspapers and the teletype, and I have reached startling conclusion that we are in a lot of trouble. Oh, boy, are we in a lot of trouble. And I guess I'll have to get into that a little bit later, but, boy, I've never seen things quite like this before. Some of you know what I'm talking about, others have no idea, so I urge you to stick around because you're about to find out. But before we plunge into the depths of despair, a bit of exciting news. This week as I was walking around aimlessly in the village, I stumbled into a record store, and what do you think I found? I found another record by Big Audio Dynamite that I'd never seen before. This one is a 12-inch single. It's called Other 99. It's a couple of versions of that song, but on this record is a song that's not on any album, and which most of you have probably never heard before, and were it not for this radio program, most of you would probably have never heard it in your entire miserable existences. Well, we're about to change all that here. We're going to play this song for you, and then we'll get into our depressing topics for tonight. The song by Big Audio Dynamite, it's called What Happened to Eddie? And who Eddie is, I don't know. The song about Australia, of all things. Australia, as I'm sure you know, has recently celebrated its bicentenary, its 200th anniversary. And, well, without any further ado, what happened to Eddie? Big Audio Dynamite here on Brain Damage. Our number is 632-6901.
I hereby take possession of England on behalf of the Like my boy cut the jeans. Why not mix it in the wedding? I'm feeling fair around high tide. Got my provision, pack my pride. Journey's long, the seas are rough. To prove a point is hard enough. It's about century of Crocodile Dundee. Took my boy in custody. Why not mix it in the wedding? It's about century of Crocodile Dundee. Took my boy in custody. Why not mix it in the wedding? I come in peace, wish you no harm. This colonial outpost to make a nice farm. 2 centuries is a mighty long time. I claim the land like you claim mine.
We wish you natives no harm.
It's the bicentenary of Crocodile Dundee. Took my boy in custody. Why not me to the wedding? It's the bicentenary of Crocodile Dundee. Took my boy in custody. What happened to the wedding?
Now in a few months you'll know my name. When the white dress is over I'll stake my claim. Discovery nowadays hard best. Stole the land, there's nothing left.
It's the bicentenary of Crocodile Dundee. Took my boy in custody. What happened to the wedding? It's the bicentenary of Crocodile Dundee. Took my boy in custody. What happened to the wedding? Crocodile Dundee took my boy in custody. What happened to Eddie?
There you go, Big Audio Dynamite with What Happened to Eddie. And that was 1988 release here, only here on USB, on Brain Damage. Big Audio Dynamite appearing tonight in Boston at the Channel. Tomorrow in New Haven. And Tuesday, Washington, D.C. Wednesday and Thursday in New York at Roseland. And Friday in Albany. And Saturday, they're finishing up in Poughkeepsie, which is kind of a crazy tour. They've been going all over the place. But they'll be back again, I think, in November, doing a West Coast run. So more details on that as they come in. It's 10:37, and again, our phone number is 632-6901. If you are currently ringing our line, we will get to you, so just sort of stay online there. A lot of really kind of disturbing things I'm finding in the newspaper and on the teletype machine. It's rather scary, in fact. I don't know where to begin. Well, let's see. What's going on around here? You may have heard that there was an abortion rights rally here on campus this week. First of all, in today's news, anti-abortion activists were on the march in several states today, resulting in nearly 450 arrests. Those are anti-abortion activists, right. 190 of the arrests resulted from 3 protests in Pittsburgh, including one in which 25 gallons of tar was spilled on the floor of a women's clinic. That's definitely a hostile action. Protests were also held in Florida, where the state legislature will re-examine abortion laws in a special session beginning October 10th. Okay. Now, in New York, some 135 people held a peaceful abortion demonstration in front of Children's Hospital in Buffalo this morning. The group marched as part of a national protest by the National Christian Action Council. A spokeswoman for the Buffalo group says they chose Children's Hospital because of the hospital's slogan, "Every child is safe behind these walls." The spokeswoman said the State Department of Health reported 651 abortions were performed at Children's Hospital in 1987. She said that statistic sharply contradicts the hospital's slogan. In Saratoga Springs, 371 people staged a march organized by the Saratoga County Christian Action Council. The anti-abortion group marched to Saratoga Hospital, where church leaders met with hospital officials to discuss the hospital's abortion policy. And that's what was happening today. Now, earlier this week, about 400 people attended an abortion rights rally. That's the other side. And the people we were just discussing are the ones that are anti-abortion or anti-choice. They call themselves pro-life, but it's something that I sharply dispute because that's something we all are, I think. About 400 people attended an abortion rights rally. What day was that? Does anybody know? I guess not, because it says yesterday here and it's from the newspaper. I guess it was on Thursday. Okay, yeah, that's my guess. It was on Thursday. They attended an abortion rights rally here at the State University at Stony Brook, an event billed as a warm-up for a national demonstration planned November 12th in Washington. Let's see what day November 12th is. Nice to have a calendar. November 12th is a Sunday. Okay. That's in Washington, D.C. Now, the campus rally was called by students with the support of the Mid-Suffolk chapter of the National Organization for Women and other groups. One speaker was County Executive Patrick Halpin, who stressed his record of support for abortion rights as a state assemblyman. Halpin said he has worked with county police to block any illegal efforts by Operation Rescue, a group which has tried to close abortion clinics in Suffolk. "We've sent them a message they are not welcome in Suffolk County," Halpin said. Voter registration tables were set up, although several of the Stony Brook students who walked by said they thought the abortion rights issue was really a national matter rather than a local issue. Kind of hard to interpret that logic. I don't understand why it's a national. I mean, it seems like a very personal kind of a thing. And the closer you get to personal, which is local, it seems the more relevant it is. As the rally went on, a group of about 20 anti-abortion demonstrators, mostly non-students, picketed nearby, holding up pictures of aborted fetuses and signs protesting abortions. One of the anti-abortion pickets said that students who supported the rally didn't have the experience to deal with the issue. "These young people have no idea what's going on," said Mae Fontaine of Sayville. "I work with a lot of young women who have had abortions. It's terrible." Abortion rights activist Bill Baird, who also spoke at the rally, noted that the battle over abortion has gone on for a long time. "Your generation has no idea what's happened," Baird told a group of students before the rally began. "In 1967 in Boston, they said I couldn't exhibit birth control devices." Some students said they were surprised to learn that University Hospital, staffed by faculty from the campus medical school, does not perform routine abortions. "As a tertiary care facility, we do high-risk obstetrics, and we do perform abortions when there is a physical problem, when the health of the mother is at risk, or when there is a genetic defect," said hospital spokeswoman Maxine Simpson. She said, "Students and others seeking abortions that the hospital deems unjustifiable for medical reasons are normally advised to call the Suffolk County Medical Society for referral information," and all that kind of thing. So that's pretty much what's going on there. And that, as far as I'm concerned, is fine and dandy. We have two sides, you know, opposing each other, demonstrating and, you know, getting their opinions out. You know, doesn't really matter which side you're on. The fact that that there is a dialogue, at least, is a positive thing. Now, the more negative things that are happening, there's plenty of those. And they all seem to center upon control over what we think and what we do and what we are allowed to see and hear. This is something that appeared in yesterday's paper that was kind of startling, very startling, in fact. A lot of people have said so. Comes off the Associated Press. A civil rights group accused the FBI yesterday of trying to intimidate a music company for distributing a controversial record that the FBI contends encourages violence against police. It's extraordinarily frightening to get a letter from the FBI saying the FBI has officially decided they don't like your music, and to intimate that the music is going to cause violence. From Barry Lynn, Legislative Counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union. The letter was written by Milt Ehrlich, FBI Assistant Director for Public Affairs. It was written to Priority Records about the song Blank the Police by the rap group NWA. NWA stands for Niggers with Attitudes. Attitudes. The song includes lines such as beat a police out of shape and taken out of police will make my day. And it's a lot of other lines, too, that they can't print in here. Gunfire is heard in the background of the record. Lynn goes on to say, the letter intimidates the recipient because the source is the federal government, and it's likely to have a very chilling effect on that record company and that artist. He said, he and representatives of Music in Action, a group concerned about censorship of rock music, that's a group that a lot of folks out there should get a hold of, met with a Justice Department official on Monday to demand a retraction of the letter. Now, part of the letter reads like this, advocating violence and assault is wrong, and we in the law enforcement community take exception to such action. Now, Thomas Boyd, director of the FBI's Office of Policy Development, didn't take a position on the letter, but said he would look into it. Justice Department spokesman Dan Aramian said yesterday that the department will review all of their concerns and points of view and try to be helpful where we can. Sort of crap like that. Ehrlich said that the letter was absolutely not a threat against the Los Angeles Record Company and that it's their decision to distribute it. But I'll tell you, if you got a letter from the FBI saying, you know, I don't like what you're doing, we don't like what you're doing, the entire FBI does not like what you're doing, and we urge you to stop it, would you say, oh, it's just their opinion, I'm going to throw away this thing because, you know, they're just people like me? No, it's the FBI, for God's sake. I mean, now the FBI is involved in throwing their opinions around about music and stuff like that. I mean, you know, you can understand somebody's concern over a song, but it's a song, and the FBI has got no business whatsoever sending letters to record companies saying that they don't like their music. Now, happen to have the record right here. That's the record cover. NWA. The record's called Straight Outta Compton. It's on Priority Records. You ought to pick it up and listen to it. Decide for yourself. Of course, none of the wimpy record stores around here will carry it, probably, because they're afraid. God knows what they're afraid of. But you can order it. NWA Fan Club, 21430 Strathern, Strathern, Unit N, as in Nancy, Canoga, Canoga Park, California, 91304. Or if you want to call somebody, you can call Jerry Heller. He's at 818-702-9276 to get more information about the group. Now, the song is on this record, but I have decided... Oops, I also dropped the record. I have decided not to play that particular song because it's got all kinds of nasty words in it. I'm not bowing into pressure from the FCC or the FBI or anybody like that. It's my decision as a radio person not to play this song on this particular program because it's got all kinds of nasty words that I just don't think are appropriate at this time. That is my decision. I don't need federal agencies telling me what my decision has to be, because to get onto any radio station, really, you have to have some standards, some idea of what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. You know, it's common sense. We don't need these regulatory agencies telling us these things. And unfortunately, there seems to be a plethora of such regulatory agencies who are more than happy to tell us exactly how to interpret every little detail of our miserable lives. So, not going to play that song, but we are going to play a song right before that. That song's even more negative and nasty. It's a song, that has a positive message and no nasty words. I mean, even if there was a nasty word, I'm sure we could all survive. But it's a song about surviving, as most of these songs are. It's called Express Yourself, NWA. This one is dedicated to the FBI, and we'll be back to take your phone calls afterwards, 632-6901.
Yo, man, it's a lot of brothers out there flaking and perpetrating but scared to kick reality.
Man, you've been doing all this dope producing. You ain't had a chance to show them what time it is.
So what you want me to do?
I'm expressing with my full capability, and now I'm living in correctional facilities. Cause some don't agree with how I do this. I get straight and meditate like a Buddhist. I'm dropping flavor, my behavior is hereditary, but my technique is very necessary. Blame it on IQ, because he said it gets funky when you got a subject and a predicate. Add it on a dope beat, and it'll make you think. Some suckers just tickle me pink to my stomach, cause they don't flow like this one. You know what? I won't hesitate to diss one or two before I'm through, so don't try to sing this. Some drop science, well, I'm dropping English. Even if Yella makes it a cappella, I still express, yo, I don't smoke weed or sex. Cause it's known to give a brother brain damage, and brain damage on the mic don't manage nothing but making a sucker in you equal. Don't be another sequel.
You actually stuck with that and listened to the lyrics, listened to what the folks were saying, you might realize that some of the things that are being advocated there are the same things that are being advocated in many other environments. Things like freedom of speech, reality, expressing reality. I mean, in that song, they kind of explain the meaning of the songs that I don't want to play on this show. They talk the way that people talk. What's the point in talking in a different way? And that again dedicated to the FBI that felt it necessary to threaten. And yes, it was a threat. Threaten the record company distributors of this music and anybody who listens to it. They have no business getting involved in this kind of thing, I don't think. What do you think? 632-6901. Also, very similar theme with this whole Jesse Helms nonsense. I'm sure a lot of folks are following this. I'm only just catching up to it because I was away for a while and I didn't even know about this until I got back. But what appears to be good news, but isn't really, a House and Senate Conference Committee yesterday rejected a proposal to prohibit federal financing of art that violates broadly defined moral standards. It acted after the Senate voted down the same proposal introduced by Senator Jesse Helms in a stormy debate Thursday night and in the early hours of Friday. And in place of that plan, the 7 senators and 5 members of the House unanimously agreed on relatively mild restrictions for the National Endowment for the Arts, which angered Congress this year by its support of photographic exhibitions and included homoerotic images by the late Robert Mapplethorpe and Andre Serrano's picture of a crucifix submerged in urine. Now, you may find that stuff disgusting. You may find it totally reprehensible. But I think it's even more disgusting and even more reprehensible and a hell of a lot more dangerous when you have government officials telling you what is acceptable art and what is not acceptable art. And that's the whole point of this. That's the entire point. They have no business getting involved. Leave it to the artists. Let the radio people say this is what is acceptable for this radio station, and let the artists say this is what's acceptable for art. The art community will take care of itself. The radio community will take care of itself. We don't need government officials getting involved and telling us what is art and what is decent and what is indecent and all that kind of garbage. Continuing with this piece from the Times, the strongest of these restrictions would prevent the endowment from supporting art defined as obscene. And the definition of obscene was created in 1973 in a Supreme Court decision, Miller versus California. And in case you wonder if something is obscene, this is how you know. A work must appeal to prurient interest. Don't ask me what prurient interest is, because I'm not going to tell you. It must contain patently offensive portrayals of specific sexual conduct, and it must lack serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. The decision on whether a work is obscene on the basis of those tests would be made by the endowment, presumably through the panels that approve grants for artists. And since the endowment is being watched very carefully by the government, in effect, the government will tell us what is obscene and what is not. Senator Helms' far-reaching measure would have cut off, this is the one that didn't pass, would have cut off grants for any art that is obscene or indecent, or that denigrates the objects or beliefs of the adherents of a particular religion or non-religion. Too bad Jesse Helms isn't a piece of art. We could outlaw him. The conference committee also authorized $250,000 to set up a commission to review the endowment's grant-making procedures and determine whether there should be new standards. I mean, this is where the money is going, thrown away on garbage like this. Complete and utter trash. The endowment's present statute requires only that grants recognize substantial artistic and cultural significance, giving emphasis to American creativity and cultural diversity and the maintenance and encouragement to professional excellence. I feel like I'm reading something from Pravda. You know, this is the way that totalitarian regimes talk. It just, it's a step-by-step process, you know. 10 years ago, this would never have been permitted. But we've gradually moved into an environment where such a thing is just another step. Well, let's take a look at some of the excerpts from this debate, which was kind of interesting. This is what John Danforth, who is a Republican of Missouri, he said this, I've unfortunately had the opportunity to look very briefly at the exhibits that the senator from North Carolina, Mr. Helms, has brought to the floor, and everything that has been said about them is true. These are gross. These are terrible. These are totally indefensible. I don't think these are art. However, I don't believe that the issue before us tonight is whether we like or don't like these pictures. I don't like them, and my guess is that not a single resident of my state would like them. They wouldn't like the idea of government paying for them, and I'm sorry government did pay for them. But that is not the issue before us. The issue is very simple. The senator from Texas used the expression, and I think that it was very well chosen. He said, the question is, what is suitable art? And the issue before the Senate is very simple, and it is whether we in the United States Senate should attempt to make definitions of what we consider to be suitable art. Now, maybe there shouldn't be any National Endowment for the Arts. Maybe the government should never be in the business of making judgments of taste, because that's what the NEA does. I think that's an arguable position, but the question isn't whether the NEA should do it or shouldn't do that. We've already decided that the NEA is in that business. The question is whether we in the Congress of the U.S. should try to establish some criteria by which we define what is or is not suitable art. That is what the senator from North Carolina does by his amendment. His amendment does not say that the Mapplethorpe exhibition is pornography and it shouldn't be funded. He does not say that. He goes much more broadly than that. He does not say that Mr. Serrano should or should not be funded by the NEA. He goes much more broadly than that in the terms of his amendment. I'm not for Mapplethorpe. I'm sick that a dollar of taxpayer money went to pay for this kind of junk. I'm sick about it. I can just see the faces of the people of Sedalia or Kabul or Mountain Grove, Missouri, if they were told that they had to pay for this. It truly is outlandish. That's not the issue. The issue is how good are we at defining whether something is suitable art or not suitable art, and how do we draw these definitions? And should we really write definitions on the floor of the Senate which cover Godspell and Tom Sawyer and The Merchant of Venice and The Color Purple and The Godfather? Now, Mr. President, I think that the answer is no. That came from John Danforth, Republican of Missouri. And it's also from Wish Fowler Jr., Democrat from Georgia. 800-900 years of art, of literature, is literally covered by the senator's amendment number, paragraph number, but when we get into these areas, exploitation of children, what about the great Titian depiction of Herod slaughtering the firstborn? Is that not a depiction of exploitation of children? What about Samson, blinded, pulling down the temple on his head? Is that not self-masochism? A man who believes his faith so strongly that he'd kill himself by pulling the temple. What? We can't let some bureaucrat decide these questions. No, because these questions that are deeply rooted and as old as all of our faiths are not necessary to reach the intent of the senator's amendment that all of us agree. If we vote this amendment number 2 and 3, we cannot disseminate any material which offends the beliefs of any religion or non-religion. I won't even get into that. Jesus said, "Go ye therefore into all the world, teach the gospel, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost." What do you think that does to secular humanism, the great non-religion that you and I, the senator from North Carolina, have tried to put aside? If that's not offensive to them, the words of Jesus, I don't know what is. And finally, some words from Jesse Helms, Republican of North Carolina, who somehow never seems to go away. Now, censorship is not involved. I've said over and over again, the issue is solely this. Any artist can produce anything he wants to, but nobody has a preemptive right to raid the pocketbooks of the American taxpayers. That's the point of this amendment, all three prongs of it. I say to you, gentlemen, you're going to have a chance to vote one way or another. Just remember that we become a part of what we condone. We have condoned too much, and so much has been said about who's going to decide. We've had an organization that we've been funding for a long time called the National Endowment for the Arts. Sure, I want to put the blocks to them. I want them to exercise their responsibility instead of exercising irresponsibility. I'm not prepared to condone forcing the taxpayers to support this kind of thing. The amendment is not vague. It is supported by Supreme Court decisions on all three prongs. Now, senators can vote as they please, but a vote against this amendment is a vote for pornography. What a miserable, reprehensible creature he is. Sorry, I just can't keep it in. I really just cannot control myself when it comes to things like this, because that man has no conception of what the hell he's talking about. Or maybe he does, which is really the scary thing. Maybe he knows exactly what he's after. But my opinion is that political people should stay the hell away from art. There's one thing we do not need is art controlled by government. And that's what we protest. I mean, Jesse Helms is the first person to protest against such a thing in an East European country, how there's Marxist overtones in every bit of art. It's the same thing, except it's going to be moral overtones. Certain messages must be brought forward. You ever notice how on TV, it's already bad enough. You know, even without Jesse Helms, it's already bad enough. On television, you have to send a certain kind of message, right? You have to say, you know, don't take drugs, be a nice person, you know, don't be selfish. I mean, yeah, okay, I agree with all that stuff, but why can't you portray somebody who has a different attitude, you know? Why can't you portray somebody that does drugs and somehow survives? Because there are such people, you know? There are people that do that. There are people that are selfish and somehow make it, you know? There's all kinds of variations. And I think if you tell an artist, that's anybody that writes a script or paints a picture as an artist, if you tell them that you have to send this message and you can't send a negative message, then you're really cutting an artist in half. I mean, a negative message is just that. It's a negative message. But you tell somebody they can't send that kind of message because it's not acceptable. It's just as bad. It's just as bad as an Orwellian type of society that only allows a certain kind of art form. And what else? What else have we got here? Okay. This is in today's paper. Judge proposes compromise on banned film. This is an interesting case about... I don't know if you've ever seen a Frederick Weissman documentary film. They're very interesting. They usually deal with institutions, you know, mental institutions and prisons and sometimes colleges. And it's like these documentaries where you see the bureaucracy in action. And it's real people, you know, real people involved in this. The things you are seeing are actually happening. Anyway, a judge has said that a 22-year-old ban on the public showing of a film that depicts brutality in a state prison hospital for the mentally ill may be lifted if the faces of many of the inmates are blurred. But the filmmaker, Frederick Weissman, says that blurring faces is not technically feasible. Even if it were, he said, such an action would violate his right to free speech as a journalist and the public's right to know how state-supported institutions are run. The film would lose its meaning, said Mr. Weissman, an award-winning director known for his unflinchingly realistic portrayal of the police, schools, hospitals, and other institutions that bring people in contact with the state. The whole point is that these are not faceless people. Their faces reflect the lives they've lived and how they've been treated. It could be years before the public sees the 1967 documentary, Titicut Follies, about conditions at Bridgewater State Hospital for the Criminally Insane. Deputy State Attorney General Stephen Jonas, who represents the state in the case, now agrees with Mr. Weissman that the ban should be lifted. Although the place is different, Bridgewater is still a matter of public concern because there are a number of accusations about how it is run. Bridgewater, built in 1852, has been remodeled since the film was made, but it's still a source of criticism. 2 years ago, a number of unexplained deaths there prompted a state court to rule that inmates needed more medical attention and that they were frequently and carelessly put in solitary confinement and in physical restraints. In the film, men who have been kept nude in cells without toilets or sinks for years are taunted by guards. The guards later complain that fumes from tear gas used to subdue unruly inmates cling to their clothes. One inmate is force-fed through a tube shoved into his nose. Another drinks his bathwater. Titicut Follies, which won praise when it made its debut at the New York Film Festival in 1967, despite a Massachusetts ban, is the only American film ever censored for reasons other than obscenity or national security, legal experts say. It was banned by a state court here 6 weeks before the debut because state officials charged that it invaded the privacy of the 62 inmates portrayed. The United States Supreme Court has twice refused to hear the case, but Mr. Weissman contends that state officials objected to the film because it was politically damaging. He added, "The state has a conflict of interest. It asserts that it wants to protect the inmates' privacy rights, but it really doesn't want the public to know how these people are treated." 2 years after the initial ban, the state's highest court, modified the prohibition by permitting screenings for journalists and professionals in the legal, human services, mental health, and related fields. In his ruling last week, Judge Meyer said that film could be shown if edited to blur the faces of inmates who are incompetent to decide whether they wish to be portrayed. The faces of those who are competent and object, and the faces of those who could not be found in an 18-month investigation. Mr. Weissman set off the latest round of court battles 2 years ago when he asked the court to lift the ban. The court appointed an investigator to search for the 62 inmates in the film. The investigator, Mitchell Sikora, a lawyer who spoke to the inmates in the film, said, "I think the state's primary concern is for the 10 incompetent individuals we located. My investigation shows they would not suffer an invasion of privacy or emotional distress, and about half of them expressed the view that it should be shown. Of the 7 who are competent, 4 wanted it shown, and 3 objected." And that is the story with that. What else? Okay. This is something that showed up today in the newspaper, and I kind of like people's opinion on this as well. Meet Nancy S. Yes, it's this is what people in the University of Oregon were handed by this person named Nancy S. And again, this relates to what we're talking about here. It really does. Meet Nancy S. I am one of a small group of volunteers engaged in a research project evaluating the sexual potential of the mature female. This project is to determine the response in the human female to intercourse with one or more male partners, as evaluated by the number of orgasms that the male or female are able to attain in a 2-hour period. The male subjects are limited to 5 to 10 for each female researcher, to be chosen by her, to be between the ages of 18 and 23, physically active and unknown to the subject. A stipend to the male volunteer of $10 U.S. for each orgasm achieved by either party will be paid at the end of each session. Each male candidate in the study will be known by his first name and last initial. He will be questioned and examined by a physician to ensure that he is not a carrier of any sexually transmissible diseases, and his physical parameters will be recorded. The physician will be present throughout the encounter and will determine the number and quality of the orgasms by each individual involved, and at his discretion, photographs and audio recordings may be made. Every effort will be made to maintain anonymity. If you wish to be considered as a candidate for the project, talk to Nancy S. Now, there's a lot of college people out there. I'd like to know, what would you think if you were handed a piece of paper like this? I mean, would you consider doing something like that? Would you consider engaging in that kind of research for a stipend of $10 per orgasm? Now, this is the story that showed up in today's paper. Turns out that a guy in the village of Southampton, Rodney Wood, is a man regarded as someone of wealth and taste, a rich and successful doctor. He has a yacht, a home on stately First Neck Lane, and a membership in the exclusive Meadow Club. And he's a real wasp, according to the newspaper. So that's a portrait of who this guy is. How does he relate to this? Well, in Eugene, Oregon, police have a different description of Wood, who is the head of Southampton Hospital's anesthesiology department. They also have a description of his wife, Nancy. They call him a pimp. They call her a prostitute. The Woods told the Eugene police that they had come to town to conduct research into the sexual potential of the mature female. The research was a scam, said Detective Sergeant Rick Gilliam. Instead, Gilliam said the couple was receiving sexual gratification by enticing young men to perform sex acts. And on Monday, 60-year-old Wood and his wife, 44, are scheduled to appear in Eugene District Court to answer charges filed September 16th by local police. Now, Wood and his wife, police charge, paid students to have sex with Nancy Wood and then photographed and tape recorded the acts. The prostitution charge is a misdemeanor that carries a maximum fine of $2,500 or a maximum of a year in jail. The promoting charge is a felony that carries a fine of up to $100,000 or as many as 5 years in jail. Now, my question is this. Are those kinds of penalties for this kind of a quote-unquote crime at all appropriate? First of all, There is the defense that these people are saying that it was a medical experiment. You know, I mean, I don't know if it really was a medical experiment, but they say that they were, you know, they were writing down certain statistics and stuff like that. But even if it wasn't, you know, even if these people were going out there and saying, you know, we'll pay you $10 to have sex with this person, is that really, you know, does that constitute something like forcing somebody? Is that, it's nothing like rape, obviously. The people are going into this willingly, and it's, you know, pretty straightforward. I mean, they might not be giving their full biographical information, but it's pretty straightforward what they're going to be doing. You know, they're going to be paying somebody to perform a sexual act, and that's about as straightforward as you can get. And nobody was forced into doing anything. So where, I have trouble with this. I really do have trouble with this, and it seems to be kind of a mania that's sweeping the nation. Is there a crime here? You know, these people are engaging in activities that all sides are consenting to. So again, why are the authorities getting involved? I mean, at most they could say, look, stop passing yourself off as scientists, if in fact they are not scientists and they're not doing this for a legitimate medical purpose. But as far as sending somebody to jail for 5 or 6 years just for engaging a little bit of fun, I don't know. I don't think it's appropriate. It's bad enough that they've got their names splashed all over Newsday today, but that's, you know, that's at risk of the trade, I guess you can say. And that's pretty much it, I guess. That's all the nasty things happening throughout the world. Give us a call now, 632-6901, if you have any thoughts or opinions on the matter. You want to talk about sex, drugs, rock and roll, rap, reggae, anything else of interest. It's 15 minutes after 11 o'clock. The program is Brain Damage. Eric Corley with you until midnight. And actually, I do have a few other depressing pieces, but I want to see if we can get some people who are still awake out there. 632-6901. That's our telephone number. Good evening.
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
No.
You can't hear me? You can't hear me at all?
You're a nigger.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, at least he waited 45 minutes to say that. Good evening.
Hi, this is Andy Goldberg.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good.
Okay, what's on your mind?
You said sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Right.
Sex I have too much of. Drugs I'm not associated with, and rock and roll. That's the thing.
What about rock and roll?
Did you know that Nina Cherry, you know Nina Cherry, right?
Uh-huh.
She has Lyme disease, and she's being treated in the hospital.
Lyme disease is terrible.
No.
It really is, because there's it's hard to tell if you have it, and it takes a long time to be treated, and sometimes you never get cured.
No, and she was supposed to be on a tour with Lyme and Cannibals.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, what else?
What do you think of all this this government intervention with our private lives?
Oh, I didn't hear. I just joined in. What were you talking about with government intervention? I didn't hear.
Well, we're talking about government saying this is obscene, this is art, this is not art, this is acceptable, and all that kind of thing. And what my point basically is that we should leave this to the individual people and to the artists themselves to decide, and not let government officials get involved in this kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to see I convinced you.
I know, but it's true because, you know, like, I remember last year you were talking about the same thing. And
well, it's just getting worse, you know? Every time I look in the papers, there's, like, more indications of this, and I don't know. There should be more objections to this because our rights are just being taken away.
Some of the, like, government people have a point, like it leads to rape and stuff like that.
No, wait. Where has that ever been proven that
no, but listen to
obscenity this. Leads to rape? I don't see that.
Absolutely true fact. Apple IIe computer has released a new video game for adults only where a fantasy girl, you can rape yourself and use whips and, like, other objects to have fun with, I guess you can say.
Yeah, okay.
So, and, I mean, I think that would lead to someone thinking about doing it or doing it.
Well, that's, you know, that's rape, right? That's something that
Electronics Boutique at Smith Haven Mall, I mean, it's really, I mean, I saw it on 2020, and then I said, well, I'm sure they don't have it, like, around here. They do. I mean, it's crazy.
They sell that game around here?
Yes.
Incredible. Well, I mean, that's something that, you know, we don't need the government to say you can't sell that. I'm sure enough enraged people will converge on that store and say, you know, this is terrible. You can't, you know, portray people in this way. This is, you know, that's what we need, you know, people themselves to object to it. I can't think of anybody that would defend that kind of a thing.
Oh, you can't.
Because that's violence, you know. That's forcing people to do horrible things against their will, you know. But as far as something that's depicted as indecent or obscene, you know, that's a passive kind of a thing. That's completely different.
Oh yeah, but I mean, there's no way of calling that art and stuff like that, and you know.
Well, you can't. No, you can call it art, but it doesn't have to be accepted by people as art.
I can see how someone could read Playboy and say it's for the articles and things, and I mean, even if they do, I mean, the swimsuit issue isn't much better than, you know, Playboy, but I mean, still, it's like those other magazines that they sell, like, only in some shops.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of magazines are, like, pretty bad.
Right. But, I mean, should we be protected from those magazines, or do you think we have enough judgment ourselves to decide what we want to read and what we don't want to read or look at?
I'm not going to tell the next guy, you know, not to read it.
Exactly. And that's what this all boils down to, is the age-old desire of some of us to tell other people what to do and what not to do and what's good for them and what isn't. You know, I think we can have enough sense within us to decide this.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't be friends with someone exactly who would play that video game, you know.
Uh-huh. And you know why you wouldn't want to play that video game.
Right.
And, you know, you have your standards.
Yeah.
And you don't need the government putting its standards into you and saying these are the standards you have to live by. It's much preferable to earn those standards on your own.
Well, I mean, I don't think this has to do with the subject, but there's a rule against me joining a record club because I'm 13 years old and I'm under 18. I mean, I don't know if that's the same thing.
Well, I don't know. How does the rule go?
Well, I'm not allowed to join a record club, and my parents have to join it, and they have to do everything. I cannot join a record club.
Right, but is that to protect you from the music, or is that to protect them from kids?
Oh, no, that's just to protect them from kids.
Yeah, okay, I think that's slightly different.
Trust issue. It's a trust issue.
Yeah, yeah, you can't trust kids. I know, that's
age-old
fact. Anything else on your mind?
Not really.
Okay, well, look, thanks for calling.
Okay.
And hope to hear from you again soon.
Okay, bye.
All right. 632-6901. You know, we had a lot of calls before, and as soon as I started talking about something serious, they all went away. So, I don't know. I don't know what that means. I know there's this feeling among people to always avoid talking about something controversial or important, but believe me, folks, if you don't talk about it, if you don't think about it, a lot of that thought and talking will just be done for you, and that's what's happening now. It's being done for you. And your words are not being heard because your words are not being voiced. And what better way to lose everything that's of any value and worth and that kind of thing. Now, if you disagree, you know, I want to hear from you too, because, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I should be corrected or something. Let me know. 632-6901, area code 516 is our telephone number. Good evening.
It's the Know-All. Do all.
Have a lousy line.
See all of radio.
Well, if anyone intelligent wants to call with a good line, 632-6901. It was enough to make an old sailor seasick. Suffolk GOP leader Assemblyman John Cochrane admitted he was chagrined last week when it was discovered that some of the American flags printed on invitations to the GOP's $125 a head fundraising bash on October 12th were typeset upside down. While the GOP has suffered its share of bad fortune in the past 2 years, use of the upside down flag, the international signal for a ship in distress, was unintentional. That's a bit of fun there. I figured I'd throw that in. 632-6901. Good evening.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Sue Boynton. I was just driving in a car.
Uh-huh.
And listening to you.
Yeah? Hope I didn't make you swerve or anything like that.
No, I wasn't driving. I was just riding.
Oh, okay.
But my comment is, I guess it was a girl that was just talking about that computer deal.
That was a kid, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
But my opinion is that, you know, you don't want the government coming in to tell us what to do in that.
Uh-huh.
My opinion is the world is such a mess right now that somebody's got to come in and say, hey, enough is enough. Not to tell us what to do, but say, hey, let's treat this world the way it should be.
Well, why do you think that we as individuals can't do that?
If we could, why didn't we do it a long time ago?
Well, do you think things are worse now than they were a few years ago, or do you think that's just something that's being sort of sensationalized to make us feel that things are getting worse?
Let's say I'm 41 years old, and now I live in Oklahoma, and I'm here visiting. And it doesn't make a difference where you're living, but now everything's so promoted, and because it's promoted, we're doing it all.
Uh-huh.
TV, obscene, can't do nothing about it. They tell you don't smoke. They want you to have control over everything. But you can't have no control when everything's telling you, well, go ahead and do it.
Uh-huh.
You know, the smoking pot, you got joints coming out on the TV, in the movies. Now, I'm not saying, you know, don't tell me what to do. But, hey, let me tell you, it's really a good world, and let's make it better.
Well, you know, I think that message is being sent as well. But it's a world of a lot of different conflicting images.
And we're not doing any good by it.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, I think we can change it. I think we can send positive messages, but by simply turning off, you see, you want the media to be an accurate reflection of what real life is. Now, television, I don't think is an accurate reflection of what real life is. People don't talk like that in day-to-day occurrences, right?
But you walk down the street and you hear, who cares about the next guy? You know.
Uh-huh. Okay. Don't you think we should be asking ourselves why that is?
No, this is her brother. I'm on the other line.
Ah, okay. I knew somebody picked up the extension. Go ahead.
I'm a minister, and but I don't preach anymore. I'm retired. And, of course, after Tim and Tammy Baker came on the into the spotlight, most ministers today who are not Catholic or a rabbi prefer not to be known as a minister. They've taken away all our ministerial programs on cable. You don't have them anywhere. I enjoyed the PTL Club. And if a person wants to send $1 million to Tim or Tammy Baker, that's their business. They enjoyed it. In fact, if they want to put him on trial, they give him a Rolls Royce.
Okay.
This person enjoyed it. I mean, they got something out of it. I don't condemn him. I wouldn't condemn anybody or judge anybody. But as you said before, I don't think... So my sister, this is not pornography, this is educational.
Well,
now, we never had AIDS before 1980 that I can remember, and we were just as promiscuous then as we are now, probably worse. And they really don't know what AIDS is. They never will. They put the nail into the coffin that they don't know what's wrong with the person, they have AIDS, whether it be male, female, baby, or whatever, gay, straight, or whatever. And we do live in a world today. I mean, I'm 55 years old. My sister is 41. And my mother has 40 grandchildren, which are very young. But kids today at the age of 2, they act like they're about 20. They're so intelligent. But I always said that if someone dies, like if I die, I always thought that my soul went into a newborn child because they're born into the space age, which we have now, or the atomic age, computer age. Like today, kids don't think. They use a computer. I mean, I learned to read and write. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, it's I don't know if it's that's kind of a generalization. Kids don't think, but they don't think in the same way that you thought. They're perhaps using their brains for some other function.
I mean, I had to think of the teacher put me in the corner,
right,
or sent me home, or I got my dad took out his strap. And today it's abuse. It's abuse. Everything's abuse. Child abuse. Wife abuse. Husband abuse.
Yeah, but of course, we're seeing a lot more of it on television. We didn't have television, 100 years ago, so we didn't know what was really going on. Or maybe we don't know what's really going on today. Maybe the media is...
Well, like you mentioned, the media. You see, even the printed media, to me, it's not freedom of the press, because the person who is writing the editorial, they never give their name, that's one person. it's a Democratic paper or a Republican paper, I mean, they say all the news that's fit to print.
Right.
No way.
And the point that I try to make on this program is that what you see in the paper is not necessarily what's happening. I know every time that I've seen a story in the newspaper that I've been personally involved with, they've gotten a lot of things wrong. And it's up to us to realize and to take almost everything with a grain of salt.
That's true. And then and read between the lines.
Read between the lines, yeah.
Now, don't you agree that with everybody telling everybody what's going on, like you talk about child abuse, I think it's great that they're telling people about it today.
Oh, sure. Sure, definitely.
But people are abusing it, you know. Everything gets abused nowadays. You know? But then you might be saving someone's life because of that.
It's important for us as individuals to decide where the lines are and not to be told where the lines are by other people and other, you know.
It's like if there's 20 people in a riot, they make it look like there's 1,000 people in a riot. In other words, if one child is abused or one cop is shot, they make a big deal out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's millions of people in the world, so everybody isn't bad.
But in the United States,
the world
States,
is
this
good.
This is a TV world and a theatrical world in the United States. Everybody goes to the movies. Everybody watches TV.
No, they don't.
And because that's going on, who knows what to do? We got Overeaters Anonymous. We got hospitals for alcohol, trying to get people straight.
Uh-huh.
How can we get them straight? And then go outside and all over, buy a beer. But yet, you'll get arrested. If you're driving with booze, which is fine, that's the truth.
Well,
but why
drive
sell the crap?
Get arrested or not.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying because of religious purposes. I'm just saying that we've really abused the world.
Well, that's true, and that should be, that
that's
should be pointed
opinion.
Out.
I think the world's great.
Well, this is my opinion.
Yeah.
You know? That's why I called
you.
Because I just think that. You know, we need someone to come in and say something. We really do. I don't want communism. I really don't.
Well, I mean, I don't think this is about communism so much, except for the fact that there is a similarity between always being told what is right and what is not.
We couldn't listen to our parents.
This is a free country.
If we couldn't listen to our parents, if we couldn't listen to our parents, then maybe we better listen to somebody stronger. And because of religion going on, nobody wants to hear God anymore, which is
that's
individual.
Nice.
But, you know, somebody's got to come in and say, hey, enough is enough.
But you see, you're making a lot of generalizations there. You're saying nobody wants to do this, we're all doing this. And that's, you know, that may be true of some people in some groups, but it certainly isn't true of everybody. And
yeah, but the majority of people are saying we're fed up with it.
Not a majority.
Look at the Christians. Yeah. You got to say that the Christians are finally speaking up.
Talking about Jerry Falwell.
You know? No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Christians are saying, hey, I don't like it.
Okay.
Or we didn't say nothing.
You got a brother and
you
sister
know?
Here.
Okay.
With eight kids. We better let somebody else get on the air.
Well, I'm just saying, your opinions are, you know, your opinions and probably those of a lot of other people, too. But
right.
Keep in
right.
mind that
she's
there are...
My sister and
right.
we both have different opinions about this.
Right. You both have different opinions, and I don't think either one of you wants the other one to be dictating the rules and saying what is right and what is not.
No,
you see?
Like
well, I wouldn't mind somebody coming in and telling me that this is wrong, you know?
Well, it's, I mean, imagine if your brother was telling you now what was right and what was wrong. I don't think you would agree with everything.
Don't you think we all do that when we're in somebody else's home or we're in somebody else's church? Aren't we telling them what to do and what not to do?
Basically, yes, but in the end, isn't it up to the individual to decide for himself?
When you get in your own home, that's the only right we ever have is in our own home. We have no rights once we go out the door.
When you were born,
we're going to somebody else's house, we're going to somebody else's church, we're going to somebody else's store. You have no rights.
Well, I mean,
you lose the rights because the people are telling you what you can do in their home, where you can do.
But you are the government, Solvay.
Yeah, good point, sir. You are the government, and also, you know, when you're reading and when you're thinking that you're on your own, you know, you should be able.
I can leave if I don't like it. No question. You can leave anywhere if you don't like something.
Then you want to be controlled, not me.
Well, I wouldn't mind. I honestly wouldn't mind. If it's for good.
Well,
if it's for bad,
like
I agree. We're not stupid. If it's for bad, then do away with it.
Well,
if it's for good, why not?
If you want to be controlled and if you want people to tell you what is good and what is bad, you won't have any problem because there's plenty of people that want to do that. But for the people that don't want this...
I couldn't wait to get out because I could not be regimented. I'm creative. I'd rather do what I want to do. I can't even be bossed around.
Well, it's pretty bad when we can't think we can do all that.
Anyway, I'm
going to
get off.
Okay, well, I thank both of you for calling. And
welcome.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've appreciate talking.
My name's Ken Stanley, by the way. Are you from Stony Brook?
Well, I'm on the Stony Brook radio station, yeah, and I'm affiliated.
Boy, I've been over there. I've debated.
Uh-huh.
I'm a civic leader over here, and I am running for Congress, but I'm not a politician, and I said I'd take the job for free, give me a house, a roof over my head, food in my stomach, and wheels. And I've debated, but I'm running against Huff Ruckman next year. And I hope this time I win, because I'm not a politician. I'm a people's person. But
keep discussing things. I'm sure we'll hear a lot more from you in the future, okay?
Hope so.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks a lot.
All right, 632-6901. I'm sure they'll be having an interesting discussion well into the morning. As hopefully lots of other people are, I see we have many phone calls now, so let's hear what you have to say. Good evening.
Burger!
Okay, good evening.
Oh, shit. Elvis lives.
Yeah, I don't think you're long for this world, though. Good evening.
Hi, Eric.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, it's Adam.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that person that was on before, actually, both people, they made some interesting points, and they brought up some interesting facts, except they never actually expressed any opinions.
Well, I think they did. Well, okay, why don't you express your opinions?
All right, let's see. For example, she brought up alcohol. She said that, you know, people are alcoholics, but then they can go out and, you know, they can buy alcohol anywhere. Well, I don't see alcohol. Alcohol is a problem. It's an individual person's problem. You know, if they go to Alcoholics Anonymous to get the strength so that they can resist going out to buy alcohol in places.
Uh-huh. Okay, I mean, you bring up a good point here, because alcohol is an individual person's problem. Now, you know, let's say alcoholism was reached such a degree that they had to ban the sale of alcohol, right, like they did back in Prohibition. Now, I, as somebody who you know, likes an occasional drink but is not an alcoholic, that interferes with my rights, because all of a sudden I'm not allowed to do something because other people have a problem with it, and my life is being controlled in a negative way.
And if, for example, you don't seem like an alcoholic, and I don't think you are, and by saying that, well, because these people have problems with it, you can't do it, that's taking away your rights, which is something that I'm sure both of them are against.
Uh-huh. That's true. I don't think I'm an alcoholic, but I think just by asking the question, am I an alcoholic, that makes me an automatic alcoholic, according to the advertisement. That's what they say anyway.
Well, I asked you.
If you have to ask yourself if you're an alcoholic, you're an alcoholic, and I just ask myself, so I guess I am. I don't know. That's how it works. Same thing with drugs.
Yeah, and she also.
But you know, what I think it boils down to, this is my opinion, is that it's really your life. You know, as long as you don't take anyone else with you, if you want to totally mess things up and you know, drink alcohol and stuff like that and take drugs, it's really, you know, it's your life to mess up. You should be encouraged not to do that, and there should be avenues open for you so that you don't feel the desire to do this. And if a lot of people are doing this, we should be asking ourselves why. You know, you can't prevent it by passing laws against it. I mean, most drugs are illegal, and I seem to see a drug problem all over the place, so the law really doesn't affect anything. It just makes it a bit more oppressive. It's, you know, it's the values that we get, and we don't get those values from the government. We get those values from ourselves, you know, from our communities, from, you know, the people that we interact with. And if that's all fouled up, why is it fouled up?
Government can't fix problems like that unless, you know, they took everyone in the country and made the entire nation into a giant mental reprogramming center.
Now, a lot of people want to do that, too. I mean, it sounds crazy, but a lot of people would be comfortable in that kind of an environment, both as victims and as the people in control.
Well, there also, he brought up AIDS. He said, well, 10 years ago there wasn't AIDS. And,
uh-huh.
Hold on one second, please.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're all waiting for you.
Yes, thank you.
Go ahead.
He brought up AIDS, and he said 10 years ago there wasn't AIDS. And but the thing is, 10 years ago, I can't think that he can say that, you know, attitudes today are really that much different than they were 10 years ago. Maybe they're expressed more publicly now, but basically what's happening in society hasn't changed that much. It's just that it's more publicized now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, brushed under a blanket, so to speak.
Brushed under a blanket.
You know,
yeah,
you
I know.
Problems,
I know.
Sweep them under a rug where no one can see them. They're more in the open now. It's not that anything has actually changed, except that it's more obvious now.
Uh-huh.
Not that it's necessarily more of whatever he's talking about going on. But AIDS, I mean, a lot of ministers have, you know, have expressed, and people like that have expressed that AIDS is here, you know, to punish people for what they do, which is, you know, I don't think that if you look at it scientifically, because, you know, according to the law, I don't think theological viewpoints really hold much sense according to the law. And the law is what they were bringing. The law is entirely what they're talking about here.
Well, how do you mean it don't make much sense?
Well, you know, there's the separation of church and state.
Uh-huh.
And one religion's view on something isn't necessarily another religion's view on it. And religion has no say in government unless, you know, let's say you have, I guess, like him, a minister running for public office. He can do that, but, for example, you couldn't have the Roman Catholic Church, the whole thing run for, you know, a Senate seat.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's you can't do that, and you can't have the government say, well, hey, how about we're going to make, you know, this blank religion the official religion of the country, and if you're a member of this religion, then you get to do all these things, and if you're not, well, screw you.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, and a lot of them bring as a point that AIDS is here to punish people because there are so many more gay people now, and there's so much more.
A lot of people believe that. A lot of people still say that, even though the problem has moved well out of the gay community and is in the mainstream. You know, a lot of people still say it's some kind of judgment from God, and
from people.
You know, it's like we're back in the Middle Ages. That's how people thought back then, and that's plague was thought of as punishment from God, and I think that kind of way of dealing with things just sets everything back.
Scientific view, I think, is, you know, accepted generally, you know, in by the law. And the scientific view of things as well. These things didn't just pop up overnight. They evolved from something else.
Mm-hmm.
They were always there, but they might have been in a different form, and they might not have affected humans yet. But, you know, it was there, and AIDS evolved from was always there.
That's true, it was. And, you know, I always wonder what would happen if AIDS had been developed, or I don't know if developed is the right word, if it had come into existence, say, 100 or 200 years ago, how could we possibly have survived, you know? I always wonder about things like that.
We're lucky that, I guess it sounds weird to say, but we're lucky that it started to spread now while there's at least a chance to control it instead of 200 years ago.
Well, let's just hope that chance comes real soon because it's...
2-year-olds are acting like 20-year-olds. I don't know, but I haven't seen many 2-year-olds going out with, say, to Sundance and moshing to bands like Nuclear Assault and things like that.
No, I haven't seen too many of those, but, you know, everyone's got their opinion on the way things are. And, you know, a lot of people have the opinion that kids today just aren't like kids of yesterday, and I say thank God for that. But it's always changing, you know. It's always changing, but I think the basic human values remain intact somehow.
Well, because, I mean, people, when they look at the past, they say, yeah, the good old days. Okay, the good old days.
Those were your good old days. You know, they're not my good old days. They're not...
When did this person grow up? Let's say the early 1900s. Oh, what was there? Nice things like World War I.
Uh-huh, right.
Plague.
There's a lot of garbage, you know, with every generation.
I mean, it's like there were problems then as much as there were now. In the 1800s, there were wars everywhere. In the 1700s,
well, I mean, look at today. There's wars everywhere too. You know, it's pretty bad.
Like, you know, the good old days. Well, I don't know. It seems like if you look at things objectively, things are actually getting better.
In some ways, things are getting better, but we're looking at it from a biased view. You know, we're not looking at it from some other part of the world where things are pretty much the same as they were 200 years ago.
I mean, the thing I think that everybody should value is human life. Right.
Uh-huh. Right. I agree.
Quality of human life generally has gone up. I mean, even in countries where they're extremely poor, their quality of life is higher than it was 200 years ago.
Well, whether you agree with that or not, the potential is there more than it ever has been before to improve human life because we have more mass awareness. We have a way of looking at any part of the world and seeing what's going on and seeing an unbiased view.
Also, as a minor,
whether we use that is up to us.
That really offended me. He says that kids don't think.
Uh-huh.
I think that by him saying that, he proves that he himself doesn't think, because first of all, as a minister he should, but it seems that he hasn't come in contact with many kids, and that it seems that, you know, the kids he has come in contact with you know, the few amount of them is, and, you know, maybe he's talked to, actually spoken to, two children in his life. You know, maybe if he teaches some Bible class and kids are all rowdy and everything, because they really don't want to be there.
But you see, I see that even with my contemporaries, though. I mean, it's, you don't have to be a certain kind of person to get those views. People that were kids not too long ago say today, oh, kids today are just, they're stupid, they don't think, and they act irresponsibly. It's the same old thing over and over again. Same thing you see with music, like, you know, their music isn't like my music was. My music was much better than the music that they play today.
Like their music.
It's, you know, generation after generation seems to go through this, and it's amazing how few people seem to look at it from a bigger picture and say, wow, isn't it amazing how I'm doing the exact same thing that I used to criticize my parents for? You know, and I think if we tried to look at the bigger picture of it all, we'd see a lot of the hypocrisy and maybe understand it a little bit better, you know?
Also, that woman kept saying, enough is enough. Well, enough of what is enough?
Well,
she never really...
Well, let me just say, I don't want to have a, you know, back-and-forth dialogue here. Just give us your opinions. That's what's important.
But the problems that they were citing are problems that have, you know, that have been here since civilization started. You know, maybe not in the form that they are now, but, you know, I guess you could say the problems have been technologically updated.
True, yeah, they have been.
But, you know, they're still the basic problems that have always been around that haven't been solved yet.
Uh-huh. And I don't think more regulations and more, you know, governmental agencies will solve anything for us. We're the only people that can solve our problems.
It's the way basic human nature is, unless you know, suddenly there's this, I don't know, unless suddenly basic human nature changes all over the planet.
Well,
I really don't think that's going to happen.
That's true. It's not likely to. Anyway, thanks for calling. We're going to go some more calls.
Okay, and I sort of like the new introduction you had today.
Well, that wasn't it, though. That was the old one.
I know, but it was different.
Well, I just... We messed around with it a little bit, but
it had a sweep tone in it.
Yeah, that does happen sometimes. We like sweep tones.
Yeah, sweep tones are generally viewed as good.
Yeah.
And nice things too.
Yeah, you wouldn't happen to know a phone number for a sweep tone, would you?
Actually, I could find one if you really want. Actually, yes, I do.
Okay, why don't you give it out and then people can call a sweep tone and be happy.
It's a long distance call, so you will have to pay a toll for it.
It's a long distance call?
It's a long-distance call.
Why is it long-distance? There's local sweep tones.
Well, I don't possess the number to a local sweep tone.
All right, give us a long-distance one. Give us the long-distance one. What is it?
Okay, you probably know it, but it's 415...
San Francisco?
Yep.
Okay.
284...
Yeah.
1111.
All right, try calling that collect, folks, and see what the operator does. I can tell you local ones. I don't know an exact... Well, I do know an exact number, but I don't want to give it out. But they do tend to end in 9979. So if you want to call a sweep tone, try your local prefix and end it with 9979, and it should give you a nice little burst of noise.
Even though there's nothing useful, you can actually
absolutely
do
no use whatsoever, but it's a lot of fun for parties and things like that.
You play a practical joke on somebody and go into their house and forward all their calls to it or something.
Yeah, that's always fun, yeah. let's not give people ideas or we might be banned ourselves. Thanks again for calling.
Okay.
632-6901. Good evening.
All right, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Okay, pretty good. I like to talk about mostly environmental issues, and I see that like we have two major problems in this world. One is nuclear proliferation.
Yeah.
And the other is, you know, damaging the environment. And we really can't do much on an individual basis as far as, you know, taking away and removing nuclear weapons, except through demonstrations and stuff like that. But we have much more of a role, especially on the local level, as far as contributing to decreasing environmental problems. And the way that we can do that is through, well, you can see the many things that have been taking place, especially on Suffolk County. We're, like, leading the rest of the nation in terms of coming up with...
environmental regulations and things like that.
Exactly right.
But I'm kind of worried because a couple of the people that are big on that just got defeated in elections. How do you explain that?
Really? I'm not too sure.
Wayne Prospect and Greg Glass both got... defeated in the primaries to people that are supported by big business.
Was that in North Hempstead by any chance?
No, that was in Suffolk County.
Oh, wow.
Wayne Prospect is in Comac. Greg Glass is out in Riverhead, I believe.
Hmm.
And I know not too many people voted, and I think it caught some people by surprise. The Democratic candidates that were supported by big business and developers and those kind of people, they defeated the environmentalists. And I think they did it on the whole tax conflict that's been going on here. Like, these people were portrayed as being in favor of higher taxes, and that's one way to get at people, to say, well, these people want to raise your taxes, so vote against them. It does tend to work a lot. I understand what you're saying about Suffolk County leading the country as far as environmental issues, but it's not going to be easy because a couple of its leading people have been defeated.
I've noticed that in North Hempstead, the townspeople there sent around a petition to bring to a vote as to whether or not an incinerator is going to be built in that town. And the local government of that town decided not to bring it to a vote, and even though the townspeople wanted to vote on it.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I'm not exactly sure why they're doing that, but it doesn't seem like they should be doing that, because if the people want a vote for it, and I've heard they have three times as many signatures as what is needed to bring it to a vote, there's still not a lot of vote on it.
Well, they have to be vocal, and they have to have, you know, demonstrations and write lots of letters and things like that, because, you know, people say, oh, that doesn't have an effect, but it does. How do you think we closed Shoreham? How do you think we got the nuclear disarmament issue to start? You know, it was those huge demonstrations. It was all the publicity and you know, the letters to the editors and all that kind of thing.
Writing to Mario Cuomo. That's going to help a lot also.
What was that about Mario Cuomo?
Putting pressure on Mario Cuomo by writing letters.
Uh-huh. I'll say this. I do think he listens. I do think he does.
Yeah. And I heard that the same people who built the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant are going to be responsible for building incinerators on Long Island if they go up.
Oh, that's lovely, isn't it?
And, this seems like a really strange deal.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, we're living in very perilous times. I mean, everyone has said that, but that's one thing I think that can't really be debated, because we've got so many things that are being destroyed. Only in the last couple of years we've been finding out about them, the ozone and the pollution in the waters and all that kind of thing. So the way we vote, the way we act, the values we instill in other people and in ourselves, it's going to be very, I don't know, it's going to mean a lot more than it has in the past, I think.
There's one thing I'd like to, let you know about.
Okay.
We're trying to tell Brazil not to burn down the rainforests, and yet in Alaska, there's an area of forest that we're cutting down. On our own, called the Tongass.
For what purpose are they being?
National Forest. For wood pulp, to make paper. And this is like a great, one of the greatest national, preserves, sanctuaries of wildlife.
Uh-huh.
And it was authorized in 1947 for the Forest Service to sign a 50-year contract with timber companies.
So I think what we need is some kind of a unified voice on environmental issues, and I can't, maybe I can point to Greenpeace as a group that represents that kind of thing, but it's just they're not as, in the news as much as they should be. They should be on the front page a lot more. It should be, because this is a crisis. This is really like a war.
Right.
We're destroying the earth, and there's no place left after we destroy the earth, so there's really nothing more important than that. And groups and people should be doing whatever it takes. This is wartime. We should be doing whatever it takes to save the planet. And forget your tedious day-to-day, whatever it is you do, because it's just not as important.
Yeah, I see it like as a race against time.
Certainly is, and this is everybody's chance to do something meaningful.
Exactly.
Even if you're able to convince two or three other people, to pay more attention and to stop doing certain things. Don't buy cars with air conditioning, for instance, because that's the single most
Fluorofluorocarbons.
Yeah, and that destroys the ozone layer. I just read in the paper today, where is this? Strong hole in the Earth's ozone concentration in the stratosphere has developed over Antarctica. I guess this is another one. Scientists said yesterday it could get worse as the South Polar winter continues. Scientists at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, said the ozone levels over Antarctica have been decreasing by about 1.5% per day through September. A week ago, the ozone concentration had decreased by about 30% from the beginning of the month. Ozone, a major component of smog, is an atmospheric pollutant at ground level, but it forms an important part of the radiation protection belt surrounding the Earth in the stratosphere, which begins about 9.5 miles above the Earth and extends upward to about 39 miles. So it's over Antarctica now, but who knows where it's going to be next.
Right.
And what the effects...
They've also noticed depletion in the Arctic ozone layer.
Yeah, I had heard about that a few months ago, actually.
Yeah.
So it's only a matter of time before it starts affecting us individually. And it may even be too late now, but that's no reason not to at least try, because what's the point of not trying?
Right.
Anyway, I'm going to go to some more calls. Thanks
okay.
very much for calling.
Bye-bye.
632-6901. Let's try to get some new callers here, and we'll see what other issues we can raise. Good evening.
Hi.
Hi.
I don't know. I just got off work about... I started listening to you about half an hour ago.
Uh-huh.
And I'm 29. I have 6 kids. And,
you're kidding. Wow.
I'm very serious.
Wow, that's amazing. 6 kids at 29. Wow.
But my husband had the radio on in the car. When I got in the car, he picked me up from work. And I just started listening, and I was like, oh, let me get that phone number. And you just made me think about so many things. I mean, things I think about anyway. It's just that I don't usually hear it on the radio.
Well, that's good to know that I actually was able to make somebody think. That really makes me feel better.
But I don't know. There was a lot that I'm thinking about. But the major reason I want to call, the first thing that you were talking about when I first started listening was government regulations and government imposing itself on our individual lives. And you were talking about art and obscenity and things like that. And I'm thinking a couple months ago I saw an article in the paper about the police stopping people for seatbelt checks. And, like, art is a big thing, you know, but seatbelts are a part of our everyday lives that, like, we don't have a choice. It's just a law. We don't have a choice about wearing them. And I realize a lot of people feel it has to do with, you know, safety, and maybe it should be a regulation. I personally think Thomas Jefferson would be horrified, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I find it very frightening that has crept into that's our everyday lives, and we just accept it.
Mm-hmm.
When I read that in the paper, I, you know, it was like when I was in high school and I read 1984, it was a foreign thing.
Yeah.
But police stopping us and checking to see if we have seatbelts and giving us a ticket if we don't. I mean, actually setting up checkpoints on the road and you just could be stopped.
Yeah.
You know, so...
See, I support the seatbelt rule, but I understand your feelings. I know exactly what you're talking about as far as the scariness of having somebody check, like, a personal detail like that. But let me ask you this. Now, you have 6 kids, right? Now, they... presumably aren't old enough to make a decision about wearing a seatbelt. Now, supposing there was no seatbelt law, but obviously seatbelts keep you safer than if you don't have them on.
Right.
Those kids, who is protecting the kids? Now, if you're not protecting them, does the government have a responsibility to make sure that they're protected?
Okay. I really believe that it's the parents' responsibility to protect and take care of their children. Just as censorship should be a parent's responsibility or a parent's choice when it comes to rock and roll or anything else, or so-called pornography. But, on the other hand, I realize there are a great deal of irresponsible parents, and I would feel less put off about a law that states that children under a certain age need to have seatbelts on. In the event that parents who aren't aware or are uncaring, you know, just wouldn't have the seatbelts on. But there's, you know, the first seatbelt law that went into effect was about the driver of the car.
Uh-huh.
Must be an adult.
Yeah, okay. I agree with you as far as that goes. I think everybody should be in control of their own destiny. If you want to smoke, That's your life. You can smoke if you don't want to wear a seatbelt. That's your life again.
Right.
You want to take drugs, and this is the controversial part, you have that right too, I think, because it's your life. If you want to mess it up, go right ahead.
Right.
But when you're, you know, when you're in charge of other people, when you're entrusted with the care of other people, both with regards to seatbelts, with regards to cigarette smoke, because a lot of people, you know, they smoke cigarettes in their houses all the time, and it's like their kids are smoking too because they grow up in this, and then usually they end up doing it too. I think, you know, someone has to protect those kids somehow, and I don't know how to do it without, you know, it seeming like some kind of big brother type of a thing.
Yeah, I guess to me, I could understand. I didn't object to the law as much as I did to just stopping people at random.
Yeah.
Or just setting up checkpoints. I could even understand that there's a law, and if a cop sees a kid without a seatbelt, he stops the car. But the checkpoint idea is just, I don't know, I found it very frightening. But to me, it seems like that's a precedent.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, and checkpoints are used for all kinds of things. I know it was about a year ago I read in Port Jefferson that the cops there, the code enforcement people there, have regular checkpoints to see if anybody has an open container in the car.
Uh-huh.
And that some of the officers even claim that they can tell by the way somebody looks in the car whether or not they have an open container hidden. It's incredible. And that kind of thing, it leads to all kinds of abuses by law officials, certainly.
Yeah.
Again, seatbelts I have mixed feelings on because it seems like such a basic thing that, I think we should want to put seatbelts on. And if we don't, that should be, you know, explored. Why don't we want to protect our lives?
I'm definitely more in favor of education about those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And I think a lot more effort could, I think it would be more effective to put money and effort into education rather than enforcement. Like you were talking about alcoholism before and personal choice.
Right.
And I think we all see that prohibition didn't work. That was totally ineffective. So
right.
We need to look at other areas, you know, because you can say that you're trying by having a prohibition on something or a law about something, but unless you're really educating people, it's just like kids. If you tell them just not to do something and they don't understand why, they don't understand the consequences, they really don't care. You know, it's not that kids don't think. It's that they don't understand some of the consequences to things because they haven't been there yet. And,
that's true.
But that's my feeling of it, anyway. So, anyway, I've enjoyed listening. Definitely.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for calling.
Okay, thank you.
All right. That's going to just about do it for us tonight, as we are pretty much out of time. However, I do want to close off the night with a special little feature that we got also from the folks at Radio Moscow. It kind of pertains to what we're talking about, some of what we're talking about anyway, mainly our drug problem. I have not heard this yet. I don't know what they're going to say, but the title on the little tiny tape that we have here, and it's only about a couple of minutes long, is the U- what is it again? What does it say here? Drug abuse in USA. So this is the Soviet viewpoint on drug abuse in USA. Thanks, everybody, who called up. Sorry to those we didn't get to. We'll be back again next week for another episode of Brain Damage, where we'll be talking about all kinds of fun and exciting things. Again, closing off, the Soviet viewpoint on drug abuse in the USA. Good night, everybody.
We present Soviet Viewpoint. Our observer, Vladislav Kozyakov, comments on the measures announced in the United States to combat drug abuse. There are clear indications that the problem has assumed a catastrophic dimension. 44% of respondents to a recent Washington Post poll have described drug addiction as the number one problem. President Bush declared that drugs are undermining the strength of the nation. He called for an all-out effort on drugs to combat the spread of cocaine and other narcotics and root out drug cartels operating in the United States and other countries. Here in the Soviet Union, there is support for the measures taken in the United States. Of course, it's poor consolation for us that in America there are millions of drug addicts, while here in the USSR, according to official figures, there are 122,000 registered drug addicts. We have many disturbing facts. Over 1,000 cases have been reported of theft of medicines containing narcotics. Criminal groups in this country have stocks of hashish and arms, and plantations of opium poppies have been found in some areas of Central Asia. Soviet customs officials have on many occasions seized large consignments of narcotics intended both for use in this country and for transit to London, Bonn, and other Western capitals. Combating drug trafficking requires joint efforts by all nations. Washington has announced more measures to help Colombia, Bolivia, and Peru in their clampdown on the narco business. The lion's share of cocaine and crack comes to the United States from those three countries. But more narcotics, heroin, hashish, and also cocaine and other drugs, are supplied to the United States from Africa and South Asia. This global problem must be dealt with on a global scale. Wishing to contribute to that cooperation, the Soviet Union has signed appropriate agreements with the United States and some other countries. But we could do still more. The Soviet Union is not a member of Interpol, and that hampers coordinating the international effort. I think that similar to other universal problems, such as poverty, AIDS, cancer, environmental protection, dealing with drug addiction calls for a change of government policies and a review of financial priorities. Some congressmen find President Bush's request for $8 billion to combat drug addiction inadequate, but it'll be hard to raise even that sum given the present $300 billion military budget and a budget deficit of $100 billion. The United States is not the only nation facing that problem. All members of the world community got to uphold universal humanitarian values. That was Vladislav Kozyakov discussing the problem of drug abuse on Soviet Viewpoint.
And you heard that here on WUSB in Stony Brook, and I just felt I should tell you at this point that the staff here at WUSB does not necessarily act as spokespeople for Radio Moscow or anything like that, but who knows what's possible around here. We did air two things from Radio Moscow in one night, so what are you going to do? Anyway, we'll be back again next week. Stay tuned. We'll have all kinds of neat music and stuff coming up. Thanks again to everybody who called up, and we'll be back next week at 10 o'clock. Good night.
The grass, remembering games, daisy chains, laughs. Got to keep the loonies on the path. The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. Every day the paper boy brings more. The door, throw away the key.
your hate and all your distrust and all you say and all that you give and all that you feel and all that you buy.
For Sunday, October 1st. Can you believe it's October already? Tonight, Simply Red and Micah Paris will be at the New Riff, The Pogues and Frank will be at the Beacon Theater, Burning Spear and Culture will be at the Palladium. On Tuesday, October 3rd, Montreux will be at the Bottom Line, Joe Cocker will be at the Beacon Theater, Elton John will be at Madison Square Garden, and Gordon Lightfoot will be at the Westbury Music Fair. On Wednesday, October 4th, Elton John returns to Madison Square Garden, and Big Audio Dynamite will be at Roseland. They return there the following night on Thursday. On Friday, October 6th, on Saturday, October 7th, the Persuasions will be at IMAX. Ranger and Princess Pang will be at Sundance, and Scruffy the Cat will be at Maxwell's. Concert Billboard is brought to you weekdays 3 and 9 a.m., 4:30 and 10 p.m. weekends, noon and midnight. If you've missed anything or if you'd just like to talk to us, give us a call, 632-6901. This is Diane on WUSB Stony Brook.